This is Healthline, a joint venture of WTIC News Talk 1080 and Yale Cancer Center. Yale Cancer Center is a resource for cancer programs throughout Connecticut, developing new advances in prevention, screening, diagnosis, and treatment. On Healthline, you'll hear from some of the leading doctors in the country. Healthline is not intended to provide medical advice. Yale Cancer Center urges you to consult with a qualified physician in your community for diagnosis and for answers to your medical questions. And now, our co-hosts, oncologists Ken Miller and Ed Chu.
Good morning and welcome to Healthline. My name is Dr. Ken Miller and I'm the director of the Survivorship Program at the Yale Cancer Center in New Haven. I'm here in the WTIC studios with my colleague and co-host, Dr. Ed Chu, who is the chief adult oncologist at the Yale Cancer Center. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Ken. Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center is our way of providing you with the most up-to-date information on cancer care every Sunday morning at 8:30 right here on this station, WTIC News Talk 1080. Our Healthline program features some of the nation's leading oncologists who are on the forefront of the battle to fight cancer right here in our state of Connecticut.
Each week, Ed and I will be joined by different experts from the Yale Cancer Center. Together, we will discuss the myths about cancer, the latest treatment available to cancer patients, and advances in clinical research. Our goal is to give you help, but our goal is also to give you hope. We will answer your questions and give you the latest information. If you'd like to submit a question to Healthline, please email us at healthline@yale.edu. We'll look forward to your emails.
Today, our program focuses on coping with the diagnosis of cancer. And it's our great pleasure to introduce our guest, Dr. William Sledge, who is the George and Esther Gross Professor of Psychiatry at Yale University and the Medical Director of the Yale New Haven Psychiatric Hospital. Dr. Sledge, thanks so much for being with us today on Healthline.
Thank you all for having me.
Well, I wanted to ask you, because our patients ask us this all the time, when you're faced with a diagnosis of cancer, when you first hear about it, obviously it's a shock, and everyone sort of deals with it in a different way, but can you give us some ideas? What are some strategies that help people and their families get through this kind of crisis?
Well, it is a difficult thing to get this diagnosis. There's so much misinformation and worry and concern associated with being diagnosed as cancer. And I think there are several things that a person can do. I think one of the main things is to arm yourself with support of colleagues and friends and professional help. The other is to inform yourself about the illness and know everything you possibly can about what it is that's being told to you. And then finally, I would say that it's important to develop family, friends, and if they're not available, professional relationships that you can confide in and share your concerns in a way that you can expect and be supported in what you're going through. So in a sense, it's a kind of an acronym for that is you can ACE it. Arm yourself, inform yourself, and confide in others.
Yeah, I think that's very important. William, I just have a very relevant story about a neighbor of ours whose brother in his 50s was just diagnosed with widespread metastatic soft tissue sarcoma. And obviously there's a tremendous amount of stress ongoing in the family. And what's concerning to me is that neither the patient, the brother, or our neighbor wants to let their parents know that this is happening. What are your thoughts on that, and what would you recommend to this family?
Right. Well, every circumstance needs its own particular approach. In general, it's not a good idea to keep people ignorant of what's going on. And the sooner you can tell people, the better, usually. And it's a common misconception that it's better to protect someone from this horrible information. But in fact, that just tends to make things worse down the line. And it's better to find a way to break it to them. And it can be done in a gentle way, a tactful way, in which you tell elements of the story, not of it all at once. And it's important in all cases is to look on the positive side, the side of what can be done, the side of what can be accomplished, and not to become caught up in the pessimism and the demoralization.
Let me ask you along those lines. In the same way, I guess you were just saying you can share the news with people in a stepwise fashion, bits of information at a time. when a person is, again, just heard this news themselves, what is their own process in terms of the different phases of receiving and sort of dealing with this kind of information?
Right. Well, I think most of us deal with bad information or negative information in a kind of stepwise way. Typically, we're shocked and frightened by the first blush. There tends to be, after that, an element of denial. It can't be so. I don't believe it. I'm not paying attention to all the elements of it. And then after that, sometimes people get angry and feel like, why me? I didn't deserve this. This shouldn't be happening to me. And then some kind of resolution and acceptance. And that's typically what happens, that process of a kind of back and forth. And the acceptance doesn't mean giving up. It means that you are accepting the reality of what can and can't be done, and you're going to maximize your opportunities.
Now, how can we as healthcare professionals help in that process? Because I think, obviously, that's critical, right, in order to have the healthcare professionals, the patients, and their families be all part of this.
Right, exactly. Well, for the most part, people are very adaptive, and you can trust that human nature is going to find its way. And I think the role of healthcare professionals is to help guide that along. You take care of the natural resources of family, friends, church, faith, and you get those as much as you can, pulling into the picture in a way that's going to be helpful and facilitate it. Where we have a role is when that process doesn't go well, it gets stopped or stalled somewhere along the way, or there's some kind of interference like major psychopathology, where a person is unable to comprehend because they're psychotic or they have a problem with their thinking or they're become very depressed and demoralized. And that's where a mental health professional should have a role to play, especially. So the kind of summarize, in a sense, the healthcare professional pays attention to what's going on, checks in with the patient about how the family's reacting, how the friends are reacting, how the person is reacting, always inquiring, always being sympathetic, and if it seems like something is not going well, to try to gently insist or urge on something to work. And if it gets really bollocked up where there's a major problem, then to have a mental health professional, either a psychiatrist or psychologist, to help out.
Well, I want to ask you, we received an email from one of our listeners, Charlene in New London, that sort of addresses the issue of how a person with cancer and their friends and family may deal with things at different speeds and at different times. So let me read it to you. Charlene writes, I had a mastectomy in November, and I'm just finishing up my chemotherapy and radiation therapy. I can tell that my close friends have become a little distant, and this depresses me as much as the treatment itself. I expect to be getting back to regular life soon, and I have mixed feelings of being angry with my friends, hurt, and yet wanting to reengage with them. So I think she wrote in asking for your and our guidance.
Right. Well, I think Charlene has got a lot going for her already, that she's able to recognize her feelings about it and be so clear and articulate about them. And that's half the battle, in a sense. What I would encourage Charlene to do, if she were here with us or if she's listening in, is to try to find a way to share with her friends that she feels disappointed that they seem to have withdrawn from her. And she would like to see herself as a person who is capable of normal relationships, as she always has been, and she wants and needs their help as much as possible. And she doesn't want them to abandon her and to pull away from her.
Great. Thanks, William. We have another email from Mike from West Hartford, who I think kind of touches on a variation on this theme. I'm 40 years old, and I was treated for colon cancer last year with surgery and then chemotherapy. So it sounds like this patient has early stage colon cancer. I feel that my prognosis is good, but I can tell that my two sons, who are 10 and 12, and my wife are very worried and treat me differently. I'm left out of some of the decision making and planning, which obviously is very critical for our family. While before the diagnosis of cancer, I was very actively involved. Your thoughts on this?
Right. Well, again, it's the writer is to be congratulated for being able to be so clear and specific about his experience. Again, I would recommend, back to the to the beginning, arm himself with the support of people in his family. And that means sitting down and saying, hey, I feel a little left out. Are you trying to protect me? Are you trying to spare me? But I don't want to be spared. I don't want to be left out. I want to be a full part of your lives, and I need you.
You know, I have to say that's good advice for all of us, I mean, in dealing with difficult situations of all different types. Anyways, I would like to remind our listeners, this is Healthline, sponsored by WTIC and the Yale Cancer Center. We would love to know what your questions are, and you can email us and your questions at healthline@yale.edu. We're going to take a short break for a medical minute. Please stay tuned to hear more from Dr. William Sledge from the Yale Cancer Center.
This is a Medical Minute brought to you as a public service by the Yale Cancer Center. Breast cancer is the second most common cancer in women. In Connecticut alone, approximately 3,000 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer this year. But there is a new hope for these women. Earlier detection, non-invasive treatments, and novel therapies provide more options for patients to fight breast cancer. In 2006, more women are learning to live with this disease than ever before. Women should schedule an annual mammogram beginning at age 40 or earlier if they have risk factors associated with the disease. With screening, early detection, and a healthy lifestyle, breast cancer can be defeated. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers such as the Yale Cancer Center to make innovative new treatments which have not yet been approved by the Food and Drug Administration available to patients. For more information, visit their website at yalecancercenter.org. That's yalecancercenter.org.
Welcome back to Healthline. This is Dr. Ken Miller, and I'm in the WTIC studios this Sunday with my co-host, Dr. Ed Chu, and our guest, Dr. William Sledge, who's one of the leading psychiatrists here at the Yale School of Medicine. William, I wanted to ask you a question that I'm asked a lot, which is, what is the link between a patient's attitude about having an illness such as cancer and the outcome?
Well, this is something that I think there's good evidence from a variety of sectors that a positive, optimistic attitude is associated with a positive outcome. Now, unfortunately, we don't always have control over our attitude, and there are a lot of things that go into making an attitude one way or another. It'd be nice if we could just simply dial in a positive attitude. A positive attitude has to be genuine to be effective and has to come from a basic a sense of hope and optimism for what's before you. And that's part of what I think is an important adaptation to the diagnosis of cancer.
It is interesting. If you look at a lot of the publications in our oncology journals, there really clearly is a very tight linkage, an association between the positive attitude that you talk about going into the start of therapy and how they actually will do. You know, in addition to good performance status. So there clearly is something there. So I guess kind of along those lines, does emotional distress and or stress, can that perhaps worsen the underlying disease?
Right. Well, we know that emotional distress in general tends to be associated with poorer outcomes medically, and I expect that's also true with cancer. Stress and distress, however, don't cause cancer, but they can certainly have an impact on one's adaptation to the rigors of the treatment and the feelings and response to having the condition. And it's probably mediated through the immune system. Here at Yale, we've got a variety of people who are working on this link between feelings and moods and immune response. And it really does seem to be this is a very positive, has a lot of potential for helping us be much more clear about the basic biology.
You know, I'm wondering if you could say a little bit more about that, because it's a fascinating thought to think that our emotions and our feelings somehow modify our immune system. Well, what's the relationship?
Well, corticosteroids clearly play a big role. Corticosteroids, the so-called stress hormone, are excreted by the adrenal glands and are mediated through central mechanisms through the hypothalamus that are related to the emotions of fear, anger, demoralization, for instance. Depression, which is in a way the kind of biological manifestation of demoralization, has associated very high levels of corticosteroids. And exactly how this works and exactly what receptors in the body we're still working on. But we know that corticosteroids has a lot to do with interfering with the ability to have adaptive responses. And so consequently, here at Yale and other places where this advice is given, people are urged to do things to reduce stress, to sleep well, to be well rested, to take care of oneself, have enjoyable activities, to exercise regularly. Things like this clearly have a lot to do with helping reduce the feeling tone, the stress tone that sometimes are associated with being ill in general.
Let me take advantage of your expertise in answering one of the questions that came in from Janet from Bristol, who emailed us. She writes, I'm presently being treated for lung cancer, and my oncologist wants me to take an antidepressant medication called Lexapro. What do you think about this medication, and what benefits and side effects might I expect?
Well, Lexapro is a very common antidepressant. It has a good profile of effectiveness. And I think in thinking about whether a medication is a good thing or not, it's important to distinguish between the normal response of being sad. We use this word depressed to refer to a lot of things. One is a normal state of being somewhat pessimistic and somewhat down. We also use it as a formal diagnosis. And the diagnosis of depression refers to an illness. And that is a clear, different kind of thing than the everyday ups and downs of being distressed or preoccupied or a little bit worried. And we don't usually prescribe antidepressants for that everyday up and down feeling of sadness or feeling a little blue. Depression is what we use antidepressants for. That's a mood disorder. That's a persistent feeling of dense pessimism, feeling like you have no future, feeling like there's nothing left for you, the inability to take pleasure in life. This is a very strong illness, and Lexapro is a good treatment for that.
Great, thank you. Just to remind our listening audience that for those who have any questions or emails, actually please write us at healthline@yale.edu. And again, just to remind our listening audience, we're here with our special guest, Dr. William Sledge, who's one of the leading psychiatrists here at the Yale School of Medicine. A question for you, William, is that as our treatments are getting much better and more sophisticated for cancers of different kinds, and we're really focusing on quality of life issues, such as how do we improve pain and fatigue and nausea, vomiting, I think one of the issues that we're not maybe doing as good a job on is kind of treating the psychological, emotional aspects of either treatment or the underlying cancer. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, of course, we've been discussing the possibility of creating a much more ambitious program in this way, and this is a wonderful time to be considering how mental health and medical services can come together, because we know so much more biologically about the underlying substrate, if you will, of thinking and feeling. So we're in a much better position to understand these things.
And in fact, actually, just to let the listening audience know, perhaps Dr. Sledge is being a bit too modest. So Dr. Sledge and Dr. Miller have actually formed actually the Schwartz Center Rounds here at the Yale Cancer Center. And so, William, maybe you can explain a little bit on what you're trying to accomplish with those Schwartz Rounds.
Well, the Schwartz Rounds are something that is imported to us from north of here in a place that I can't mention in New Haven. But it is quite a terrific program that's designed to examine the experience of compassionate care and to improve it as much as possible, and one way is to support the caregivers and help them support each other in their work in taking care of patients. And I was very impressed with the quality of this discussion last week that we had. Your staff is absolutely terrific. They're wonderful in their kindness and their generosity towards the patient that was being discussed, as well as towards each other. But the notion of the Swartz rounds is to begin to look at this interpersonal, psychological, social dimension of provision of care, both among the caregivers and between the caregivers and the patients.
And that is an important issue because actually one of our pediatric oncologists, Nita Caden-Lodick, here at Yale Cancer Center, recently published an article looking at the risk of psychiatric illness in cancer patients. And what was actually astonishing to me was that over half of the patients who indeed had a major psychiatric disorder had not received any type of mental health services. So it's clearly something that we need to pay much closer attention to.
Right, exactly. That was a very nice study, and I was impressed with it. Something like 12 to 15% of the patients had a diagnosis of major depression, and probably many more than that had a subsyndromal depression, is what we call it, when it doesn't quite qualify. But the experience of being demoralized is a major part of getting the news about cancer, and how one deals with that, I'm sure, has a lot to do with the outcome in terms of whether or not things can go better. I mean, we've all had my father, for instance, he died of hypernephroma. He had became very demoralized by having the diagnosis, and his course of illness was very brief as a result. I've had other relatives who've done extremely well when they've had these kinds of circumstances.
I want to share with you another email that we received from Barbara, who lives in Greenwich, Connecticut. She writes, I had very early breast cancer a few years ago and have been left since then with a lot of worry and a lot of concern for the future. And, you know, as listening to the discussion, I'm thinking, you know, is this demoralization or depression or maybe a little bit of both? But, you know, what are some strategies for people, not just for Barbara, who indicates that she's, I guess, in her late 40s, but at different times of life, are there different coping strategies that are helpful?
Well, yes. I think obviously the experience of an illness like cancer is very different for a child or an adolescent or a young adult or someone who's older. Certainly one of the important things to do is to talk about it, to try to develop a clear idea of what this illness means to you at this time in your life. Some cancers, of course, are not necessarily associated with mortality or reduced mortality. And some, the issues are more disfigurement or loss of function of one sort or another. So it's very important for the person who has a diagnosis freshly to have a chance to explore what it means to them.
All right, we're going to pause in a minute for a survivorship story, which is a story we're really pleased to share with you. I'm going to remind our listeners to please email your questions to healthline@yale.edu. Again, we would love to be able to respond to your questions. And we're going to take a break for a survivorship story.
A few years ago, the diagnosis of cancer was a death sentence for many patients. But today, thanks to advances in clinical research, we're turning the corner in the battle against cancer. There are over 10 million cancer survivors now living in the U.S. They are the true heroes in the war against cancer. Here's the story of a hero from Guilford.
My name is Kathy. I am a cancer survivor, and I am the mother of three girls. I was diagnosed with breast cancer at age 40. I had had my baseline mammogram at 36, but with no family history of breast cancer, I was told to return when I was 40 for another mammogram. I got the diagnosis that no one prepares you for, cancer. But I was lucky. I was referred to the Yale Cancer Center, where I met Dr. Lannan. I underwent a double mastectomy in the summer of 2004. I still take tamoxifen daily, but have been cancer-free ever since. If there is one message that I want to convey to all women, it is to get a regular mammogram. I am a perfect example of how early detection is part of the cure.
This survivor story has been brought to you by Yale Cancer Center.
Welcome back to the WTIC studios. This is Dr. Ed Chu with my co-host, Dr. Ken Miller. And we're here with our special guest, Dr. William Sledge, one of the leading psychiatry experts at the Yale School of Medicine. And our focus today is on coping with the diagnosis of cancer. I guess one issue that we haven't yet touched on yet, William, is the issue of denial. So is there a place for denial? Is there such a thing as healthy denial versus destructive denial? And maybe you could expand on that.
Well, I think denial is a complex phenomenon and a complex issue. And I feel that there is such an idea of healthy denial, which is really the mind's attempt to regulate painful stimuli. And it should be respected and it should be given its due. And it's our way of making sure we don't get overcome by sensations or ideas that are too much for us. And so if a person signals that they kind of heard enough or they don't want to hear anymore or that's enough for now, then we should back off and not push them. Destructive denial, though, is a more rigid phenomenon of which a person simply will not hear and will not know certain information. And you can tell it to them all kinds of ways and they never get it. That's much more problematic. It keeps people from knowing what they need to do in order to make the best of their circumstance. And so that probably requires some kind of professional intervention of how you deal with this kind of rigid, and it's usually a sign of great fear, and sometimes it's a sign of mental illness.
I wanted to move on to a slightly different topic, which is that thankfully there's more and more people who are living with cancer and living beyond cancer and going on with long, healthy lives. And I think people are changed after this experience. And one of the issues that comes back is going back into the workplace and going back into the family. Can you give us your insights into that?
Well, I think normalization is important. To live as normal a life as possible is very important. And it should people should be encouraged to go back to work and should be encouraged in doing so to talk freely about their illness and to make it easier for other people to ask them about it and to interact with them about it. And so I would say more power to them. They should go back and they should feel free in talking about it to others.
For our listeners, if you have questions for Dr. Sledge or for Healthline, I encourage you to go to our website, yalecancercenter.org, for more information. Before we sign off, Dr. Sledge, what are the three most important coping tools for people who are diagnosed with cancer?
Well, I think it's important to take charge by knowing as much as you can, to arm yourself with knowledge, to seek the support of others, and to actively deal with the issue of demoralization and possibly depression if those began to affect you.
Okay. Thank you, and very, very good advice. I want to thank Dr. William Sledge for joining us here at Healthline.
And remember, tune into WTIC News Talk 1080 every Sunday morning at 8:30 for Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center. Our next program will focus on the role of Chinese herbal medicine in cancer treatment, and our guest at that time will be Professor Yongqi Cheng, one of the nation's leading experts in Chinese herbal medicine. Until then, this is Dr. Ed Chu
and Dr. Ken Miller
from the Yale Cancer Center wishing you a safe and healthy week.
You've been listening to Healthline, a joint venture of Yale Cancer Center and WTIC News Talk 1080. Join us next Sunday morning from 8:30 to 9 a.m. for another edition of Healthline on WTIC News Talk 1080.